Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
Somebody hit the door.
Yeah.
So we roll.
Oh god, there's someone.
Door warden.
Great and believable evil.
You are here for that? Then you're in the right place. Otherwise, welcome aboard.
I would like to say also that this is the best attended panel that I've been at yet.
You're welcome.
Come to the evil one.
No one better bad guy.
Coincidence.
It's pure coincidence. Because the horror one.
No, it's not.
It's on like Sunday night.
Yeah, I will be there. Yeah. So trust me, I know because I got most of Wes's families. Are there any children present?
Mentally or physically?
Physically. Okay, good, because content advisory, this panel may contain salty language. Also, we're going to discuss disturbing stuff. So.
And we're salty people.
Yeah.
So, first off, let's go and just get some quick introductions. My name is John Compton. I am the organized play lead developer, so I do a lot of work on Pathfinder Society organized play and soon to be Starfinder Society organized play.
I'm the project manager. My name is Jessica. I touch everything.
Project managers are innately evil, so you're a great choice for the panel.
Lawful evil.
Of course.
Yes, lawful
right. Kind of evil.
Evil for our own benefit.
Rules are rules.
Exactly. I'm hurting you for your own good.
And you know, I think that's a really important thing for us to even get this panel kicked off on, is the idea that, you know, evil isn't necessarily vindictive. Like, Jessica doesn't come to us and say, I need this by this date because, bleep you, that's why. It's more...
Literally. Last week. What does this need to be done now? I'm like, because fuck you, that's why.
So there have been times that I treasure because she did not come to me and say, because fuck you, that's why. It's because she came to me and said, because no, seriously, we need to get this thing done, no matter how much this hurts. So there are times when evil, really, almost all the time, evil should have some form of motive. When it comes to creating believable evil characters, you have to have some foundation for their acting in this way, for it to be conveyed to the players, to the readers, what have you.
Nobody gets up in the morning, well, very few people. I'm sure there's somebody, but very few people get up in the morning and I'm like, today, I'm going to be a supervillain, right? Like, even people that we historically view as supervillains had motivations that they believed were logical and maybe not always necessarily right, but ends justifying the means, right? Like, there are sadists out there, there are sociopaths, but generally, you know, even sociopaths have their own internal logic. So you can have villains that have no motivation beyond, like, I just want to watch the world burn. But even people who just want to watch the world burn, usually something has happened that has made them feel that way. So.
So looking at the backstory of whoever these people are, or if you're looking at an entire culture that you want to be evil, again, why do they do it this way? Whether you're ascribing some sort of really, really angry anthropological reason, because it's like, oh yeah, they totally do a survival of the fittest extreme deathmatch mode every Sunday, because that's how they figure out who eats that week. Or whether it's, hey, this character sure did have a rough childhood, or this character sure did attempt to do this thing several times and got shut down every time. Whatever the heck it is, there's a reason for them turning. And when it comes to writing these into adventures, it's like so many pieces of adventure background. If it's only for the GM, then it's that much fiction that nobody else is going to see. You want to be able to make sure that you can convey at least some aspect of this to the players so that they have context for why this person keeps showing up, you know, fireballing the tavern that they're in, cackling, and then flying off to the net. Oh man, that reminds me of stuff. Exactly. Good point.
The other thing to remember, even though this panel is creating believable evil, is that enemies or opponents don't always have to be enemies, right? You can have a character who's getting in people's way, who's opposing what the PCs are trying to do, that isn't necessarily hostile toward them or even malicious. Something I particularly enjoy doing because my players always seem to, you know, get somebody who has detect evil or, you know, it's detect alignment. You can have villains that are neutral, Like, you can have a nice-seeming dude whose child has been taken hostage and can't, for whatever reason, tell the PCs that. Yeah?
Are we going to do a Q&A post, or can we ask questions now?
Let's do post.
Or maybe we'll sort of bookend certain chapters of this panel with some questions. How about that?
What works?
Yeah, but so you can have a character who has motivation to oppose what the players are doing that isn't necessarily evil, or maybe is evil, but wasn't always that way and is understandable.
My question deals especially with that. The idea of one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist, and how do you reconcile that with a very cut and dry alignment system?
With a lot of internal debates. we get more. I think that's the practically the only thing that actually gets people at Paizo angry at their coworkers is alignment debates. So part of it is, part of it for me personally is, why is the character doing it? And what kind of, how typical is this of the character? Like, right, like the loving father who grits his teeth and kills somebody to save his kid, I would probably not classify as evil, even though he might be doing something evil in that particular moment. Like, that's not his overall alignment. And so, you know, if you have somebody who detects alignment, I would still probably have him detect as neutral, right? Like, we differ on staff as to what determines a person's alignment. Like, if it were totally up to me, I'd actually have alignment be fluid. Like, you know, what you're doing in that particular moment, right? Because, like, even if we think of ourselves as particularly good, I'm sure we've all had moments where, like, I recognize that the reason I did that was really selfish. But, you know, given that, generally speaking, we have alignment as something that is fixed, and, like, an alignment change is a major character change, I think you can have people do single actions or, like, one exception that is not in keeping with their permanent alignment. And it's a good way to, like, it's a good way to fake your players out. You know, if you have somebody who is basically a decent person who is going to do this one terrible thing because they feel they have to, because, you know, they're being blackmailed into it or whatever, and you don't want your players to know who the villain is right away, you can use their expectations based on the alignment system to make that a plot twist.
And it goes the other way, too. When it comes to creating believable evil, you can have somebody who is alignment evil, who's not doing evil with every action. It's not like he picks up a fork and knife and is like, well, I could eat this steak, or I could stab my companion. That's not necessarily good.
The best of us.
you can have evil people who still are, as you mentioned, not enemies, but are also even necessary allies. Where it's the PCs have to grit their teeth and be like, we are going to work with you for now, even though we understand that A, you're a bad person, and B, even though you say that we're going to be partners for this entire thing, we don't know quite what it is you're after or where, when you'll turn on us. And that's sometimes even reflected in, reflected nicely in literature. Like, if it's a, Wes's book, Bloodbound, there's a vampire that they travel with. Sure is a skis ball and sketch, but he is on their team. And so that it creates an interesting dynamic where it's like, you're evil, but we kind of need you.
And it creates a sort of continual tension for the players, like, is this person going to turn on us? And then also, what is it doing to us to continue to work with this person? So,
and what can we learn through the interaction with that person because we have sort of an understanding of non-aggression for this time at least? Where, okay, we're traveling overland for a while. We sure do hang out at the campfire for like 2 weeks. What do we talk about? Does the villain talk about some of that motivation? Like, oh yeah, the reason I set that orphanage on fire was because I wasn't hugged enough as a kid, or...
I feel like you may be missing a step.
Well, yeah, that's why I have more than one conversation.
I was jealous of all the hugs orphans
get. We get more than I did.
You have terrible diseases.
Right.
You have to be cleansed.
Or I'm jealous because they go through life being unhugged, and I got hugged too many times by, like, weird aunts. So,
or I was an orphan... It was horrible. I kind of, like, I'm a nihilist. I kind of wish I were dead. I'm going to spare these children, you know, the pain of growing up this way, right? Like, it's an evil motivation, I think, because those kids should get to decide for themselves. But, you know, it is at least an internally consistent motivation.
And that's part and parcel with what is evil. The idea of motivation, bad men doing bad things, or bad people doing bad things in the name of authority or what they think is correct.
Yeah. If you assume that having a consistent reason or even an understandable reason makes somebody not evil, then you get into a realm where you don't think anybody in the real world has ever been evil, because they've all had reasons, right?
Yeah.
No. Well, I mean, assuming that you don't have something, you've had a complete psychotic break, but...
It certainly doesn't work anywhere where you have physically measurable alignments.
Right.
Yeah. And we've been talking about like what mortal evil might look like. We're also, you know, working in a fantasy setting. So there are immortal outsiders, and we have huge categories of these guys. So if you're ever looking for inspiration or even a supernatural mentor for an evil person who might have been like, well, I kind of steal from the collections dish, but then there's this demon that's like, you know, you can use that dish to kill people, right? you can always look at the caricatures of what those fiend categories are about and say, all right, what drives Sakhils? What makes them evil? What is their brand of evil? Can I take a slightly less, oh, whoa there, buddy, version of that evil and put it onto this villain and come up with something that is engaging? Who knows, even endearing after the fact when you're telling stories about it later. Or when you, the GM, are telling stories about it to your other fellow GMs who are like, ah, 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 oh, really? He done that to these people? Suckers. Well, it was a body count. So,
that's how we keep score.
Well, that's one way. So you can always look to the outsiders or even the evil planes as a template for what can impact or even forcibly drive somebody to be evil. You can take one of those neutral or even good-lined NPCs that showed up earlier in a game, and in a world with possession, in a world with dominate person that lasts a day per level, or a charm person that lasts a day per level, go nuts! You have all sorts of great opportunities to not only explore what that, how that person behaves, but even what they do afterward, and how they come to terms with it.
And it's also, it's difficult choices you can put in front of your players, right? Like, if the question is, we have to end what these daemons are doing, and the only way to do that is to ally with the devil, because at least devils are lawful, and like, if you are good enough at constructing the contract, you can maybe limit the harm that they will do. But, you know, there's also the question of, like, if we ally with this evil outsider to defeat this other evil outsider, are we then empowering the one that we allied with? Is that thing going to do something terrible later? You don't know. So if you want to put, you know, sort of the sticky moral choices in front of your players, playing one form of evil against the other is a great way to do that.
That also allows you to explore evil in degrees, where you can say, all right, villain A is, oh, dang, evil. Tell you what, we're, instead of demon and devil, let's say it's a devil and another devil. Be like, devil A is absolutely terrible. Devil B kind of talks nice and has and gave me tea when I came to visit and didn't like put shackles around my legs. That's pretty cool. Devil B is kind of the nice one. So we can see both or through you know, what they say, what they do, and even what others say about them, and use that to define what is the nature of each of their evils, and use that as another way of painting a picture for your players that, you know, evil isn't just monolithic. Evil isn't just cackling and twirling your mustache. There's more to it than that.
And you can make evil have consequences, right? Like, maybe you're... Because it's very easy to be like, oh, this is a creature with an LE in its stat block. Okay, that is a mechanic, like every other mechanic. You know, yep, sure, he's evil, he cackles and twirls his mustache a lot. As the GM, if you actually want to make it feel like it's evil rather than a sort of arbitrary mechanic, you know, you can have consequences, right? Players can ally with the Church of Asmodeus to get something done and come back to the quaint little village that was next door to wherever the Church of Asmodeus was a few months later and find out that, like, shit's gotten real dark there now because, you know, they sure did ally with the Church of Asmodeus, they sure did pay them, right? They now have more money and more reach.
You sure do use a lot of blood in your harvest rituals now. That's cool.
But look at these peaches. They're great.
I know. Yeah. Amazing. They even come pre-branded with a star.
They're tasty.
I have a cat who's a serial killer who regularly kills birds. She's not an outdoor cat. She's an indoor cat. She kills all the birds on my balcony. And so, like, for a long time, I would come home for work every day, and there would be a dead bird waiting for me, and I have had to bury them.
Sacrifice.
Under, I know, right. I had to bury them under a bush outside my apartment, and that bush is so lush. And every time I look at it.
And that's even another wonderful thing when it comes to presenting evil or questioning whether something is evil within an adventure, because it's like, oh wow, we sure do see that one of our neighbors does go out at midnight and bury bodies under a bush. What's she up to?
Then there was the bird that survived, and I was going to take it outside and put it under a bush. And I was like, oh, I can't put it on the bush where all of its friends and family are buried, so maybe she's a different bush.
Anyway. So continuing on your allegory of the cat with the birds, from the cat's perspective, the cat is hunting and killing for you because it takes pity on you because you don't seem to know how.
I'm terrible.
Oh, it's awful. She's so really you're so bad at hunting, so she's teaching you how. Well, so this does fall under the topic of conversation. You know, I really wanted to open up to the idea of a good aligned villain and discuss that, because I'm thinking specifically of a villain such as Gaston from Beauty and the Beast, because he really honestly believes, and so does everyone, that giant mob going up to the Beast's castle, they all believe the Beast is evil.
Okay, so I don't want to see this panel turn into an alignment debate.
What I'm trying to get at is can this be something that can be built into the idea of a believable villain? Also, especially a believable villain that could be good aligned, versus not necessarily evil aligned, or even, you know, forgetting the alignment, could be any alignment, just has a similar motivation to Gaston.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, your opponent doesn't necessarily have to be your enemy. Somebody can be trying to stop the PCs from what they're doing. I mean, you could, good aligned villains are harder if the players are good aligned, right? But, and I mean, I wouldn't even call them villains, but you could have, you know...
antagonists.
The players have to steal some secret knowledge from heaven that, you know, heaven believes is not safe to have in mortal hands, but...
they're dumb.
Well, or they're right, but if you don't get that knowledge, Robogug gets out. And, like, maybe, you know, depending on how your cosmology works... maybe Galarian isn't the only other planet in the solar system, and, you know, heaven is like, well, we may have to lose one planet to save the universe if this gets out, but, like, your PCs are like, no, we're saving our planet.
Just to continue with the cat thing for just a sec. The dynamic that you have with that cat, Jessica, I really want to have a villain pairing, where there is a person who is on the verge of evil, and there's a demon who keeps on bringing bodies back and being like, look... you're a shitty villain. I killed this guy.
I'm trying to help you here.
Look, you can do this too. But no, what have you done? Here, let me throw the body at you. Look, see, it's easy.
She catches flies, she tears off one wing so they can't fly, and then she brings them to me and is like, we're going to start with the F. And then when I, like, get up to get a paper towel, she, like, maintains eye contact with me with this disappointed expression and reaches out and just crushes it. Is that so hard? So anyway, my cat is trying to mentor me in serial killing.
So
anyway.
So we have established that cats, despite being small animals, actually do have an alignment. It's not neutral.
I mean, look, they're outsiders. Like, they're not bound by the laws of physics. Like, too frequently, I'm like, okay, look, I know that you're not bound by the laws of physics, but they're there for a reason, and one of these days, you're going to miscalculate and send the Earth hurtling into the sun because you wanted to get up where the treats were. But... so, yes, my cat, a villain.
So, tied into the motivations, and tied into the general narrative arc of using villainy and evil, is, you know, eventually you're going to, in a story like with Pathfinder, you're going to have a moment where the PCs come into direct conflict with this person. And as I tend to advise my adventure authors, once they are within sight of the PCs, expect that the PCs are going to pull a gun and end the entire story arc. But
PCs.
Yeah, that is common parlance. So when a confrontation ultimately happens, though, you want to be able to make sure that you have some means of a satisfying ending, some sort of way of resolving evil that feels like justice.
Ah, so they did a psychological study of people who really like horror movies and found out that most people who really like horror movies are also really moralistic, right? They like seeing people get what they deserve. Because generally speaking, in horror movies, at the end, the villain gets what they deserve. And, you know, mostly we can all agree that's largely okay. There's also stuff that is arguably less okay, like the people who get killed off first, but usually the movie goes... It puts in some clue that, like, maybe they kind of deserved it. A lot of times, that is a female character who the movie positions as promiscuous, which, you know, patriarchy ruins everything, but that's another story. But anyway, so for it to feel good for your characters to actually end somebody or... well, yeah, I'm going to go with end somebody for the moment. It has to feel aligned with what that person has done. I don't mean in the alignment grid sense, but like you're gonna want a different ending for, you know, a villain who couldn't help what they were doing, right? Versus a villain who like is a sadist, a villain who's super egotistical, who's super sadistic. Rather than killing them off, a satisfying ending might be, you know, taking away their power and humiliating them. Versus like, you know, there are common tropes of things that are not necessarily evil in the classical sense that you still don't want to have power. So like one classic super scary thing is like a child who gets godlike power and doesn't use everybody as their playthings. And it's not necessarily like intentionally evil. They just don't have the maturity to wield that much power in a responsible way. Or like the AI, who does what is completely logical, which may not be the best thing for people, right? Like, it's the whole premise of the Halo series video games, is you have sort of fungus zombie plague, right, that can take over organic matter and, is pretty much unstoppable. And so the AI is like, okay, well, the way to fix this problem is to just wipe out all the organic life in this universe, or in this galaxy, so it doesn't spread, right? So, as a carbon-based being, you are probably at that point going to be like, no. How about we find another way to defeat the zombie plague? Excuse me. Objection. So, you know, in some cases, the crazed AI, or not even necessarily crazed, but the AI whose vision of what is the right thing to do is so radically different from what is probably best for living things, you know, shutting it down, ending it, is probably satisfying in and of itself. If it's, you know, the child god who doesn't really understand what they're doing, probably humiliating or harming or causing that being to suffer is not terribly satisfying because they don't know what they're doing is wrong. So.
And you may even have a villain that is cognizant that he or she is suffering in the process of this, at which point resolving that suffering might not even require violence or what have you. There's even the possibility of presenting, depending upon the type of story you want to tell, of presenting something where there is no just answer. And that leaves the uncertainty, no matter what the players choose, of did we do the right thing? What are the ramifications of this? Does this beget more villains because of how we handled this? You can create generations of evil within the storytelling, and that creates some delightful continuity, especially because for the second group, the players don't need to ask, why are you evil? It's, I see. It's because we assumed that goblins weren't people, but you were.
Our bad. But they're not.
Yeah.
Snakes made
and you, right. And apparently you share notes. Okay. Well, glad we had this talk.
So generally speaking, you don't want... Games are different from passive forms of narrative, like TV or movies or books, right? in a game, you are participating in the narrative in a way that you're not, right? You watch a movie, no matter what you do, the movie is not going to change. The same things are going to happen, no matter how many times you watch it, spoiler alert, it's still going to end the same way.
Oh my gosh.
games are different, right? The players are actually influencing where the story goes, the game responds to what the players are doing, and to a certain extent, the players are complicit. So you don't generally want to have an ending that is super bleak or makes the players feel like a bad person, right? Like, that's one thing in a movie, and that's great for, like, sitting and talking about it, because you didn't really do it. There are times that it can be interesting, right? Like, the original Bioshock did kind of a good job of, like, making you think about video games and how on rails they are and whether you actually have a choice. But in general, in a narrative that can go anywhere because the players are helping tell it, the sort of twist ending that's cool in a movie just kind of leaves a sour taste in people's mouths. And the flip side of that complicity is that the fact that this is that whatever happens is happening to players' characters, which are to some extent an extension of themselves, means that you have to be careful what you do to players, right? The sort of thing that might happen to a character in a movie that we might all be okay with is not necessarily the same when it's happening to a character that you're playing and, like, you know, you're being addressed by the GM. So when you're dealing with subject matter related to horror or, you know, related to really intense situations, you want to make sure that everybody at your table knows what they're getting into, right? Because it's like, we all think, when we're younger or whatever, that, like, oh, I'm going to spring this on them and it's going to be really unexpected and, like, that's
great.
Cool,
it's gonna be great.
Right?
Yeah.
Because, like, part of scaring people, right, part of horror movies is, like, unexpected jump scares. Okay, gives you an adrenaline rush. So, jump scares, one thing, if you can replicate those in your game, like, a lot of times that is fun. Sudden loud noise when you're telling a scary story can, you know, also helps relieve the tension because everybody, you know, jumps and then starts laughing. But as far as, like, actual bad stuff happening to characters, you want people to have opted in, right? That doesn't mean that they necessarily need to know exactly where the plot is going to go or that you have to, like, tell them the whole story ahead of time, but it does mean that you have to give them a sense ahead of time of what kind of horror this is, right, so that they can actually opt in. You know, if you have somebody who has major issues with, like, body horror, and they don't know that the scary game they're agreeing to play is going to have a ton of body horror, like, they're likely not going to have fun. And ultimately, even scary games are supposed to be fun. I mean, one of the reasons we like scary stories is because they allow us to sort of experience fear, rehearse how we deal with fear without real consequences. Sometimes when somebody's participating directly in something, there are real consequences for them. So you need to be careful that content advisories are your friends.
Enthusiastic consent.
Yeah, exactly. It is. It should be consensual.
And there's a fair amount that we can speak of regarding horror, especially when it comes to consent, but that's also true for evil overall.
Yeah.
So even if you're not going for a scare, there are lots of really bad things out there in the world. Not all of them belong in a game, whether that is publication or whether that is for your home group. And understanding where that line is super critical, because it's, you can with evil say, okay, and the evil person is evil because of, and then you can say, vaguely in this direction evil, fade to black level detail. And we can all nod and say, okay, that's bad news, we don't need to delve into that, the particulars there.
Yeah.
Too real.
It's the same thing with, you know, different groups have different tolerance levels, different individuals have different tolerance levels for, like, describing gore. Right? So, like, find out what your group is cool with. People may not be okay with you describing in detail what happens when you run a sword through somebody's guts. You know, so, like, you can find ways to describe things happening that are vivid without necessarily having the sort of detail that may upset people or may take them outside of their comfort zone.
And Jessica was mentioning earlier about how there's a difference between passive and active consumption of these games or media, because for a GM in particular, you can adapt on the fly. So you may go into a game session or an entire storyline saying, great, this is going to be the evil guy who does all the torture all the time. And by the time the players get to all the torture all the time, you realize that, oh geez, no, like, nobody here is comfortable with this. Okay, it's up to you to take whatever that evil is and pivot in a direction that people can be comfortable with. Because
some of the torture, a moderate amount of the time.
Well, or even, there's a difference between saying that something is in the world as, like, the, we all know that rape happens in the real world. That doesn't mean that it needs to happen in your game. That doesn't mean that even if it is a backstory in your game, that that needs to be something that happens in the present tense in your game. Torture's a big one with horror adventures. We have a lot of internal debates about, like, okay, well, you know, do we include torture implements as dungeon dressing? Like, yeah, that's probably fine. It's probably fine to have an Iron Maiden. On the other hand, do we give people a system for torturing people?
That it mechanically incentivizes them to torture people?
Yeah, probably not, because that's probably something we shouldn't trivialize by, like, making it a
I have skill focus torture.
Exactly, right? Yeah. And, you know, we continue and have debates about torture in PFS. So.
We do, yeah.
Or the emails that explain that stuff how you do it.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's acknowledging... There is stuff being sort of part of the scenery of the game, and then there's stuff happening to the characters or that the characters are doing, which, you know, is a very different matter. Because, again, that point where you're participating or it's happening to you is very different from, like, this is a thing that we know exists in this world. So.
You want to take a question break?
Sure.
All right.
All right.
I see somebody back there.
Okay, so, So, I've made a couple of villains before, and I make the concept, and then I figure out the backstory and why they're evil and all that, but a couple of times, I figured out the backstory, their motives, and I've just been like, oh, poor child, they need to be okay, I need to redeem them right away. How do I keep from getting attached?
I think your attachment can be a good thing, because what it means is that you are predisposed to provide the PCs some sort of, let's not just shoot them in the head, level solution. So what you said makes it sound like a redemption is a great thing. So it's a, I do evil because, I don't know, I'm addicted to evil or something, or I don't know that I have other options, or whatever the heck it is. Great. The PCs can now be part of that solution. And they can also do the legwork to figure out that that's what's behind all of it.
It can also help you incorporate multiple genres into your game, right? Because if when you find out why somebody is doing something, it makes you want to cry. It's not just horror, it's now tragedy too. And it's okay to like it is okay to be like, I understand why this person is doing this. I feel really terrible for them. I wish that I could help them. And I still need to stop them from setting off that bomb. You know, so, like, you can have it work on multiple levels like that.
So, I'm not sure if this is going to come out correctly, like, how I mean it, but I play a demon tiefling in the current campaign that I'm in. And she's currently, she's neutral good, and she's, like, she tries her best to be, like, the nicest person ever, because nobody likes her because she's a tiefling, and it's very obvious. And she finally has friends in the party she's in, but... The demon that's part of her heritage, a succubus, is starting to harass her again, and it's starting to fuel her desire for destruction and bloodlust. Like, without her, that's the word.
Is she not cognizant of it?
No, she's aware of it, she just doesn't want it.
Okay.
And, shoot.
So, being stalked by grandma.
Yeah, essentially. And I want her to go through this whole thing of, like, the moral balance. Like, I want her to go through, you know, leaving a bit evil because, you know, it's part of her character development and this whole heritage thing. I ultimately want her to end up being good, but I want it to go in a way that has more depth and isn't so cheesy demon girl.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
So there's, it's interesting that you use the term moral balance, mm-hmm. Because that's actually a psychological term for a phenomenon that,
I go to school for that kind of stuff. So.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So moral balancing is psychologists realized that people who attended church regularly were more likely to commit small acts of, like, shoplifting. And they were like, what? Why? And then they discovered that people who gave, like, considerable amounts of money to environmental causes were also more likely to engage in petty things like shoplifting. And they did a bunch of research and discovered that there's a phenomenon known as moral balancing, where we feel as if, as long as we're generally good people, we can, like, do a little bit that's wrong and it'll all get balanced out. For a tiefling who actually has evil sort of written into their genes, and so, like, the way that I usually play that is they don't have a strong innate moral sense, right? Yeah. Like, they're usually... Tieflings in my games usually become very attached to, like, a particular good religion or a good philosophy because they feel like they need that system of what is good because they don't understand it instinctively.
Yeah.
You know, you might want to have the temptation of, like, I have done all this good, so I can probably get away with this little bit over here and have that be...
A good example of it is she got into an arena fight with this. He's my GM and my husband, so. she got into an arena fight with an NPC, and it went from, you know, the healthy sort of mindset in combat to where I need to win this fight. Mm-hmm. It went from that to her hacking her arm off.
Yeah.
Because something just switched, and she decided I'm going to destroy her.
I think one of the other things that you consider from a narrative standpoint, especially if there is an external factor acting as a force of temptation, is for that succubus to set up sort of challenge choices where it plays upon one of the classic alignment tropes of good is harder than evil.
Yeah.
Where the succubus is like, hey, look, you totally could do this evil thing. It's going to feel good. It's right there. Oh, I mean, you could do all this stuff and do the good thing, but, I mean, look at this opportunity.
Yeah.
And depending upon those choices could be what helps to steer the character.
Okay, yeah.
That way there's choice for the player as well, and not just a, surprise, bloodlust, everything goes to red!
No, it's usually, like, surprise, bloodlust, and then she comes down after it, kind of like a high, and then she's like, oh my god, what did I do?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
So one of the examples you gave was the ancient demon kind of giving advice on how to be evil. Do you have any thoughts or tips on creating ancient, pure evil characters and how to use those effectively in your campaign?
Absolutely. The idea of somebody... The idea that what defines evil and what defines acceptable behavior changes over time can be used to great effect because somebody from a different time period can seem extraordinarily alien. And sort of the idea of an alien or cosmic or misunderstood evil is a wonderful trope. So right now, one of my friends and I are playing through Mass Effect 3 where there's a character from a great time in the past time period who has all sorts of commentary that is by no means politically correct, and whose idea of how you treat other people or how you incorporate them into your civilization or whatever, whoa, buddy, that's really not okay. But from that person's time period and culture, that is how things are done. And so if you go into an Assyriani tomb or an Aslanti fortress and you find, oh gosh, there's an Aslanti person in Stasis, and let's say, for example, I'm making things up about our canon for the moment, that, oh, the Aslanti is a big bag of dicks. Well, great, you can use that as not only a window into another time period, but as a reason for this person brushing up against evil without being, again, mustache twirly evil.
It's also, right, so the idea that something that is, you know, that ancient creatures that are, you know, that existed prior to human civilization are evil just because they're so ancient and so alien is Lovecraft, right? Like, that's the core of Lovecraft's work, is we don't understand these things, therefore they are horrifying. But there's also, like, if something's old enough, you know, it's really hard, I think, if you've lived for 1,000 years to still see individuals as, like, having meaning, right? So you can have a creature that, you know, maybe originally was trying to do good, but, like, ended up with the mindset of, like, oh, well, this generation didn't work out, so, like, they're a lost cause, And that can, over time, become, like, none of these people matter individually. The ends completely justify the means. Like, you know, I'm going to wipe out these people because, like, this is a waste of resources, this village. And, like, maybe if I get rid of all of them, whoever moves in will, you know, be better. So.
Very Avalon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, or even, like, biblical, right? Flood. Wipe them all out, start over.
So, it sounds to me, from what you guys have been talking about, that one of the keys to really believable evil is nuance, and having like a dynamic way of looking at it, a lot of shifting perspectives. But there are also mechanics in the game, I'm thinking specifically paladin conduct, atonement spells, certain cleric gods they follow, that would make that tricky. Can you guys talk about ways that even in your own experience you found where you can preserve some of those mechanics in the game to also still have evil that's on a nuanced level?
For me, the idea of divine repercussions for a divine spellcaster not being instant is a lovely one. Because that way you can have your cleric of a good aligned deity take some really sketchy actions that they believe that under their circumstances are in fact an acceptable representation of that faith. And only a little ways down the line when push really comes to shove is that person cut off from divine power. That's one way of approaching it.
So paladins do not have to be lawful stupid. Right? Sure. That's the way to play them if you haven't put any thought into them, if you haven't studied ethics, if you haven't... lawful doesn't necessarily mean rigid. It means systematic. Somebody who's lawful good doesn't have to accept that a particular lawful ruler who's doing evil things. You know, a lot of times you get the paladin being like, you either get the paladin being like, this person is the lawful ruler, therefore we can't do anything about it, or you get the paladin being like, this person is evil, I chop his head off. Right? Lawful means that you try and change things within the system. It doesn't mean that you don't try and change things, and it doesn't mean that your responses are so scripted that, like, you have to kill the evil king even if it's going to get you all murdered, right? So a lawful good character, a paladin, may be like, oh yeah, that king is evil. How do we lawfully change, how do we put someone else in power, right? Like, how do we get the people to depose him? How do we get, how do we get the church that ordained him to withdraw their blessing and make his power illegitimate so that somebody else can replace him, so that somebody else can be crowned? And similarly, the fact that he's good, that the paladin is good, doesn't mean that, you know, he has to immediately get rid of this king, right? Because the king might be evil, but, like, if you immediately topple his authority and the country falls into anarchy, well, generally speaking, you know, as much as, you know, when you look at an illegitimate government, it's like, to the barricades! We gotta bring it down. The people who suffer most in revolutions are often the most vulnerable and the most innocent, right? Kids die. So paladins don't have to be lawful stupid. You and then you.
Expanding upon that, how can you reconcile the idea of the ends justify the means with creating a believable evil character, or not necessarily an evil or believable evil character, with that concept?
It doesn't have to be absolute, right? Mm-hmm. I can believe that the ends justify the means up to a certain point, right? Mm-hmm. You may cause people pain when you do surgery, right? Like, you're going to be in pain when you're done, but it's to save you from having a heart attack, right? That doesn't... Okay, but that doesn't mean that I do surgery without anesthetic. You know, like, people act like whatever your moral philosophy is, or your ethical philosophy, it can't have any exceptions. That's not... There's nuance, there's...
People don't work that way.
Yeah, people don't work that... Well, not only that, but, like, ethical systems don't work that way. They have exceptions, they have nuance, they have principles that supersede other principles, and they sometimes have essentially a rock, paper, scissors thing where, depending on what the situation is, different principles supersede.
And as far as define what that is for a given character, come up with what their personal success conditions are and a couple of sub-goals along with it. So that it's like, okay, they might say,
I need to do this for the greater good. If I hit 2 out of 3 of these goals, though, I still feel I'm getting the greater good done. So if goal C partway through is like, whoa, okay, hang on, that's the bridge too far, I can still feel personally fulfilled by doing these other two slightly lesser evils and still being kind of an evil villainous individual.
It's someone over there, and then...
No. It's the same thing for, like you said, lawful stupid as well, evil stupid.
Yeah.
My players hate my pragmatic evil doers. He says, okay, I will help you. Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, but I profit from it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the only way to have evil characters in a party,
yep.
Right? Like, if they're not willing to work with their party members, you don't have a game anymore. You just have an argument.
Well, this evil character actually said, you cannot do this stuff. I can without any problem.
Yeah.
I hate that.
So it's an evil gatekeeper, really.
Yeah. Like, you're not evil enough to do this. This is my territory. Well, I mean, there's also a character that I'm not sure that I would necessarily qualify or characterize as evil. It depends on what they do. But there's the archetype of the character who's like, I've done too much terrible shit. I'm irredeemable. Don't sully yourself with this. I will take it on. Which can also be a redemption arc, too.
Yeah.
I was wanted to elaborate on his, the ends justify the means kind of thing. I look at it almost like, if you guys go through, look at Law Abiding Citizen, if anyone's ever seen that movie. This guy had some real, started out really great guy. Heinous stuff happened to his family, and the legal system bailed him. So to illustrate a point, this guy went through and did some very, very heinous stuff back. But it's in a way of going through and it's like, hey, it's not what you know, it's what you can prove, right?
Right. Well, I mean, the whole idea of like...
But it's the entire, this entire thought of that mentality of, okay, you guys, this is acceptable. You open your eyes.
Right.
So
that's
I'm doing evil to open your eyes.
And that's, in a less heinous sense, that's defense attorneys, right? They're there defending people a lot of times, people that they're pretty sure are guilty, to make sure that to test the system and make sure that the system is, only convicting people that it can prove have done wrong.
You take that guy who's with the main person they're rallying against is the law, the Duke, the whatever, and they're going through that. They become the antagonist to your characters, but in their own minds, they're doing what they view as right. It's still evil and acts.
Mm-hmm.
But in his mind, this is perfect. Things need to change. This is why it needs to change. So he's still evil. He's still believable.
Yep.
But there's that thing where you now kind of feel sorry for the guy as you're coming after him.
Yep. It all comes back to an evil character that does not have understandable motivations for why they're doing evil. You can get away with that if the character is super alien, right? But if the character is a human being, it's like, unless they're crazy.
As far as showing some of that motivation, one of the big traps that I've fallen into a couple times as a GM is putting whatever your villain is on screen as sort of either an untouchable or ideally an unknown evil, and hoping that none of the PCs get suspicious and just club him, which has failed so many times for me. Which is to say, sometimes what you can do to create the most believable evil is... bring in one of the allies of the PCs and have them grow to appreciate this person and respect this person and say, oh, wow, you're the guy we know we can always come back to and you will treat our horses right, or you will, you'll always repair our armor, or you'll give us a safe house in this terrible tyranny. And you have something bad happen to this person, or this person sniffs out an opportunity that's just too good to pass up, and suddenly you have sort of a homegrown evil off of a known quantity within your game, and the player's like, oh gosh, not only has this person gone off the deep end of evil, but we know this person, we've hung out with this person, I mean, like, we did double dates with this person, I mean, what the hell? we know everything about them, but holy shit, man, this is not okay, and we don't even feel comfortable going in and rolling initiative to, punch him in the head. We need to find something else about this, and suddenly you have involvement. You might even have all the players feel betrayed about this whole thing. So now it's not just, this guy's being evil, he's a tyrant, hobgoblins. What you have is instead, it's like,
bullshit, man. You took care of our horses. I mean, you gave them oats. We trusted you. You stole them. You ran off into the wilderness. You formed a bandit gang. You burned down our town. What the hell? Why? Why?
Why?
Well, it's because...
15% tip rather than 20.
Because you were 15th level adventurers, and I asked for a +1 battle axe, and you said you wanted to sell it so you could get a slight boost to your cloak of resistance. I thought we had a deal. You've created evil. It's believable now. It's something you'll tell a story about.
And with that, I think we are out of time. Thank you all for coming. Hope you're having a good con.
And in about 10 minutes, we'll be talking about languages.
Yes. We even have slides for that one.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to No Direction Podcast.